Hey everybody, it's Kat, and I want to welcome you to episode 9 of Backstory Sessions, and I'm joined today by Matt.
Hey everyone, how are you?
And we're really excited to bring you this episode because episode 9 means that we've been at this for 2 months now, and it's really kind of hard to believe, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, it's been fun. A little bit of a learning curve for me, but I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, like, I work on improving one thing each week when I listen, and then I mess something else up, perhaps. Or so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to work on, but I feel like that we've put together some really good episodes so far. They've been interesting, and we've got to meet a lot of different people, so it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm getting better at pushing the buttons.
Well, you know, we got to set the bar high there. So don't think you've, like, made it just yet. Of course, if this episode is being listened to, then, you know, that's a good sign.
Yep, I'm still pushing the right buttons.
That's right. Chief Button Pusher, that's the title that you got early on. So I think it still applies. You know, I think a lot of stuff has changed in these 2 months. We talked a little bit about it, but, you know, the first episode, we were planning to release Love and Jello within, you know, a month.
Yeah.
You know, then...
That didn't happen because I've been slacking in the writing process.
Well, you know, I mean, a pandemic did hit. That was pretty unexpected 2 months ago, at least to what it would mean, I think. I mean, I never could have imagined that we would be isolated and self-quarantining and, you know, social distancing and all those things. Restaurants not, you know, I mean, it's just like, it's almost like something that you would make up for a story. I never imagined that would happen so quickly.
Yeah, I've been working the whole time, though, so either at home or now I'm back in the office. So obviously my time is sort of limited. It is what it is. I was hoping to be able to finish up Love and Jello and get that, you know, get the final edits done and get it out there, but just didn't happen that way, so.
Yeah, and I think the main thing we both considered is that we don't want to just put it out there when it's not the way that we want it to be. So,
don't want it to suck.
For time, but it's okay with it, you know. It's going to be great when it is out there finally, and we'll feel like this is what we want to present. So feel good about that. It's a great story, and you did a great job with it. So
thank you. Oh, shucks. So,
well, you know, you've had some other success in writing that we can talk a little bit about too.
Didn't we write? We wrote a couple plays in the last 2 months. I think three, maybe.
Or four. Yeah, three or four. We've been pretty busy.
Yeah, there was the one for the, there was the one about the game show couple.
Yeah, so we did two bake-offs that were, you know, the out-of-state quarantine bake-off. I think it's in Minnesota, maybe. Mm-hmm. We did that one and the KTA one. You actually did that one. So, and then we had a couple of other pieces that we were just working on for plays. So been really busy over these last 8 weeks.
Yeah, it seems to be, you know, I know for a while there, it was like, podcast Saturday, write the plays Saturday, you know, during the day and then finish it on Sunday kind of thing. And along with that, getting the podcast out. So.
Yeah, and then, you know, getting you to work because you're an essential, in an essential job, I guess, according to the state.
That's what they tell me.
You are essential to the podcast. That is for sure. So
yeah, you couldn't push the buttons from there.
I'm not good at pushing buttons anyways. People really like me. So, you know, with the KTA and these bake-offs, I think maybe some of the listeners haven't ever participated in a bake-off. They're sort of new during this quarantine thing. I think they become more popular. But so in a bake-off, and a lot of people, when they first see it, think that it's cooking related. And I think some people have even commented when I would invite them, like, you should enter this bake-off that KTA is sponsoring. And a few people would say, oh, I can't cook, or something like that. So, you know, that was just a chance for me to explain. But basically, you get 48 hours in some cases. And on, you know, at whatever release time, you get these 5 ingredients. And the ingredients can be anything. I mean, we've had really wild ones, from flash mobs to conversations with Andy Beshear, you know, aliens landing. Just there have been all kinds of things. So you could get, you know, any 5 ingredients. You don't know what those are. But once they're released, you have 48 hours to write a play of 10 minutes, 15, you know, it depends really on the bake-off rules. But it's going to be a short play. And you have to incorporate all those ingredients someplace into your plot. So you are able to do that in the Division for Practitioners for KTA. And your play in color ended up being the first place winner. So can you tell us a little bit about what it's about and how you came up with the idea?
So there were 5 ingredients, I think, and then 1 bonus one or something, or was it 4 and 1 bonus? I forget, but
yeah, 5 and 1, I think.
Yeah, so there was a flash mob, there was
talking horse.
Oh yeah, talking horse, conversation with Andy Beshear, chorus of lawnmowers, and
empty fairground.
Yeah, the empty fairground. And then there, the bonus thing was, what was that?
Like some kind of disagreement over the last of something.
Oh, right, yeah. So most of the people seem to go for comedy, and, you know, I guess that was probably because of the flash mob and the talking horse kind of thing. And my initial take on it was something a little bit different, probably because I had just finished watching a movie maybe the day before or 2 days before about a guy with PTSD. The play that I wrote centered on a guy who was suffering from PTSD, and he had a brother who owned a pizza place, and used to go in there every day to get pizza from his brother because he was living on the streets and, you know, was just living the life of a homeless person. And he was very susceptible to noise and, you know, yelling and things like that. Is susceptible the right word? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it definitely escalated the episode, it seems like. So
yeah, so he was, I don't know, susceptible is the word. He's very triggered by it, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
So there was some arguing going on between his brother and one of the customers, and, you know, while he was there trying to have pizza and he was watching TV and he was imagining he was talking to Andy Beshear, who was giving a speech, an update on the coronavirus. So this argument triggered him, and he like ran out of the pizza place and into the street, and ended up getting hit by a car. And then there was some So he ended up in the hospital, obviously, and his brother came to see him and wanted him to come and live with, the brother wanted him to come and live with him, and he said, I can't because I'm afraid that you would end up being hurt. And, you know, he kind of made the, I guess he likened his situation where he, you know, where he went to this dark place to like being at the fairground, the deserted fairground, and watching them mow the grass. And, you know, that's how I kind of incorporated some of the elements that needed to be incorporated. And he was telling his brother, he always remembered like all the colors and the lights and things when they used to go to the fair together when they were younger. And so the end result was, you know, he's going to continue living on the street and searching for the colors. So that's how.
And that's a really, I thought, was a really powerful ending to incorporate, you know, in color, which is the title also, with that, you know, symbolizing the kind of life that he could see.
Yeah. Like, he had moments of lucidity where he was, you know, where he wasn't, like, having these episodes where he was just kind of blanking out and, you know, not, I guess, just not being all there mentally. So I ended up looking up some statistics on what, you know, on PTSD, and because I always associated it with, like, you know, military veterans who were, you know, there are many who are affected right. by it, but it's not necessarily just military people. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why people suffer from PTSD. Could be workplace violence or even like domestic violence and those kinds of things. And there's really, you know, there's a staggering number of people and a staggering amount of money it costs per year to treat those people. And even more people go, they go untreated because it's hard to get a diagnosis for it, I guess. So anyway, I just found it really interesting, and I included some of those in the at the end of the play.
Well, I think one of the things, well, I did not expect when you first told me your idea, I was really surprised because I did not expect you to go the route of dramatic. I thought that you would go with a comedy.
I did too initially, you know, when I was like, I didn't know what the ingredients were, but I mean, like, in the days leading up to it, I was just imagining that it would end up being a comedy because, you know, that, I guess that's sort of not the easy way to go, but I mean, that, you know, everybody wants to write something that's funny and, you know, because people are going to like it. And that's just what I sort of imagined in my head when I was thinking about whatever it was I was going to write. I mean, I didn't know what the ingredients were, but then when I heard them, I guess it was just, you know, it just didn't seem like it to me. I mean, I like the idea that I had initially, I think when I texted you, was like, you know, what if this guy is, you know, imagining these things like the talking horse and, you know, and he was suffering from some mental issue or something. It was the initial yeah. thought.
And you know, I wasn't sure how it was all going to come together.
Nor was, you know, I.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think that's the fascinating part is that, you know, the initial way you discussed it and the way it ended up, like, you know, there was a lot of change as the characters developed and you actually wrote it. But
Yeah, it was. It's hard to write a play, in 15 pages, because you have to get so much information into, the first few pages, and then you have to make a story out of all that. So, it was difficult. It's not like, oh, you just throw down some lines and, make it all work. It takes some forethought, I think. Like, okay, I have so many pages to do this, and then I need to incorporate this, and so I kind of mapped the story out in my head, and go from there. But just because I start in one, start writing in one, like the I start writing the first ideas, it doesn't mean that that's how, what I initially thought is how it's going to end up. And I think we've talked about this before, where things just kind of take on a life of their own, and it just goes from one thing to the next, and hopefully you end up with a good story at the end. So.
Well, I definitely like the characters, the brother, the relationship of the brothers. I did not imagine that to be, because I know at one point it seemed like maybe you were not going to reveal they were brothers at first. But, by doing that, that was one of the things I really loved about it so much was the relationship of the brothers.
Yeah, I was gonna have I was gonna reveal that at the end as sort of a plot twist, but it just made sense to do it early on because I had to get in the talking horse part, and the guy with the guy with PTSD, his in the play, his name was Dell. He used to call his brother Horace, because of. They used to watch Mr. Ed together, and so his brother would imitate Mr. Ed, and so he would call him Horace, Horace. So
Right. And so I think too that is like a really interesting way that you incorporated one of the ingredients, which was a talking horse. And I think, like at first thought when you see that, you're probably going to think comedy because, there's not that many talking horses in reality. And so it's probably going to be something funny. But the way you subtly incorporated it, it seemed to fit with these characters. And it wasn't like you were just going down a checklist and saying, okay, I'm gonna, I gotta put a talking horse in. So I've done that. I've gotta put, it wasn't like that. I thought that you really crafted the ingredients. And I guess it is like a bake-off because in the recipe, when you would taste the finished product, which would be watching the play in this case, I wasn't able to like taste the, the bit of this and the bit of that. It was just like all really put together well. And so I think that I think you did a great job. And I was really, really pleased to see the readers that performed it. They were outstanding as well. So it was just the whole bake-off I thought was a really interesting process for KTA, and I loved seeing everyone's work come together. But I think you did an exceptional job. I was really, really enjoyed it.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun to write, and again, not quite as I expected it to be. I'd like to maybe, I don't know, I might expand it somehow and add a little more to it to make it a longer version. I like the story and I like the characters, and I think I'd like to develop that into a little bit longer play to tell a little bit more of the story.
Well, and that's like a great thing that can come from a bake-off. And I could definitely see that happening with this piece because of the characters and the bond of the brothers. And there's so much more that I'd like to know about them. So I could see that expanded and and it's still being a very compelling story. You know, I think that's where we're, like, we write often together, but, you know, we write separately as well. And I didn't enter the Bake Off because I was sort of coordinating. But, you know, my mind, of course, did go to, you know, what would I do with these ingredients? And I don't know that it would have been necessarily comedy, but it would have been different. My idea was to have, you know, this couple that has waited to get married, you know, maybe even because I didn't write it, I don't know the specifics, but maybe they would have been an older couple that had been, you know, sweethearts at one time, and then life, they'd taken different paths. And so they finally found each other again, and they were going to be married. And then the quarantine, you know, the pandemic hits. And so they can't really have this big, this wedding that they've been planning. And so I was going to have the gentleman to, you know, to express this to Andy Beshear that, you know, he wanted to at least have this wedding in the best way that they could. And so it was going to be at the fairground, and probably the talking horse would have officiated the wedding. So she wouldn't have known. She would have just kind of been sad that they didn't get to have it. So he would have planned this whole thing, you know, with what was available. And like the last of something, maybe, you know, like a loaf of bread, and he just wanted the bread tie because that was going to be the ring, you know. So, I mean, there would have been humor to it, but it would have been incorporated to the bigger picture, you know, that it didn't matter if you had the big wedding or not. It just mattered that they loved each other and that they, you know, that they did end up with being able to get married. So
who in that scenario ends up dying?
Lover's fighting with, he's fighting with over the loaf of bread because he needs that ring.
Usually he kills someone off in one of your plays. So.
Yeah, so I mean, I could see that's probably how that happened. I mean, man has to do what he has to do because,
sure, you need that bread tie.
He needed that bread tie, and, you know, a pandemic didn't stop them, so you can't let a loaf of bread. I mean, you got to have it.
Right.
So, I could see that happening, and so that's kind of the take that I had in my mind if I would have written the play, and, you know, maybe I'll write one. I'll put that on the list. Like, you know, we keep lists of things that that we think could be ideas someday. So
gonna have to add to that list soon. I know, not that we're getting to the end of any of them. Just I don't know. We just need, like, I always feel like we need to keep coming up with new ideas just to keep things interesting, you know, so we can you know, we can pull things when we want to write. We can just pull an idea for something and, you know, get started on it.
Well, and I think, like, with the bake-offs, those are good for, you know, because you have no idea what the things are going to be, and just getting them, and then you're in a time constraint, so that puts the pressure and motivation that you're going to get it done.
Right, so. But on the other side of that, when we write plays, not necessarily for a bake-off, but for anything, really, I mean, we've written them all in, you know, a day or two.
Yeah, we really do seem to, like, once the idea takes over for us, we seem to it just flows, and we go with it like that. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. I mean, I think if nothing else, we're quite different in writing approaches, but we can work well together to craft something too. So I don't know. I mean, it's just pretty amazing in some ways, I guess some might say.
No, oh, I mean, you know, that's because I'm like the idiot savant playwriter.
You know, there's probably some other explanation too, but
I would hope. So, you know, our friend there, Mason Mitchell, she won her thing. Her she was in the high school
Yes, in the
group.
high school division. And you know, I'm very proud of Mason too, because that was the first time she had written a play. And so of course the first time she'd entered a play in a contest. And I love about this Bake Off that, you know, there was a first timers category as well too. So a lot of people that had never written a play got that opportunity. And I remember, you know, I remember when you had not written a play and how exciting it was to watch you as you know, just like developed the skill and you just embraced it. And there was a playwright in you. And so I think with Mason, you know, it's just the beginning for her as well. And
Yeah, I
so
would hope so. She did a really good job with hers, and I'd like to see more of what she can, you know, what she can do in the future. So.
I think she will. I think she expressed that she wanted to write more. So, you know, it's just I just love that. I of course teaching, I saw it, but you know, now in this chapter of life, I love seeing it too. And so, for everybody that entered the Bake Off for KTA or any Bake Offs, you know, if you haven't written a play, you never know if you have that skill until you try. And
That's
I
true.
think that's what they're great for. So,
Yeah, so talking about I mean the KTA event was it was fun. It was you know, it was fun to do, and you know, it was a good event, and you know, hopefully maybe that'll be done in the future again. You know, I
you know,
guess
I
we'll
hope
see.
so. I really do hope so. Maybe not under the same circumstances of a pandemic,
Yeah, we
but
could do without that.
yeah. But you know, I do think that it forced the theater community to look at virtual performances as something viable. Whereas, you know, I mean, nothing takes the place of live theater, in my opinion, of being there, you know, in the audience and being so close to the stage and all of that.
Yeah.
But when you have nothing, certainly, you know, virtual puts another dimension there that you don't have in any other way to experience. So, you know, I'm happy to see it being used in the arts world, and
Yeah.
I think it will continue in some ways,
Yeah, I guess
even when the world happens to go back to,
normal.
yeah, whatever normal's going to be.
Right, yeah. So, so I am working. I mean, this podcast is being recorded before the one that we recorded previously with Mason and Bethany and Aaliyah from Lynn Camp. That podcast will be going out tomorrow, and we're recording this one for next week. So, right now I'm in the middle of, you know, editing that podcast to be put out tomorrow night. And so, you know, it's a struggle sometimes finding, like, you know, I want to make it good because you know, the podcast turned out well. Just the editing part of it is to take out all the noises and, you know, maybe condense some things down and stuff like that, but or you know, or add music to the beginning or whatever. So I'm in the process of doing that, and where was I going with that cat? I don't know.
Well, I think he's just trying to tell you how a podcast is put together, and that you know, this is the Mother's Day edition of podcast that we're recording right now, and so probably it would be a good time to you know, talk a little bit about Mother's Day.
Oh, wait, before we do that.
Okay.
So I was thinking that when I was editing the episode and listening to what everybody had to say and things like that, there was one person who we failed to mention who I think we really should, and that's Arthur Canada.
Yes, Arthur must be mentioned because he is the Promise Neighborhood School Coordinator at Berea College. And so he works with a lot of the area high schools. And he is the person responsible for us meeting the Lynn Camp students to begin with.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. So he read the play About Your Life. And then he sent that on to Corey Taylor. And then she actually, even though there wasn't a drama program at the school, you know, she is the one responsible for coordinating everything to make it possible to be performed in May last year. So that all started with Arthur, and he's just been very, very supportive, and he is to the students in these schools as well, but certainly he has been to us also. So definitely we want to thank him for all that he does.
Yes.
And has.
Yeah, definitely want to thank him. Without him, there wouldn't be, you know, the play last year wouldn't have happened, and, you know, there probably wouldn't be the things that we're doing now, which all kind of started with him. I just want to say thank you, Arthur.
Right, and I second that, so...
So anyway, I know your mother is not feeling her best. So, what are you going to do for Mother's Day this year?
Yeah. So happy Mother's Day out there to everybody, mothers and grandmothers, you know, aunts, all those people. I will say with the pandemic and the restrictions, and those are very necessary to keep everyone safe, especially, you know, our more elderly population, or just any setting where people are, you know, living together and contained, it could spread very easily. So, you know, due to that fact, my mom being in the rehab facility,
not rehab for any, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, for fall that she had is how it started. So,
okay. You know, so she wasn't drinking at the time or anything, and
you know, she was, and she may have to go to another rehab after this, but actually she can be detoxing too. So yeah. So no, mom.
Happy Mother's Day, Faye.
But, you know, it is unusual this Mother's Day because I've been able to see her in the past, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, only through a window from me being outside of the building, you know, looking into her window, which has a screen. And that's very, you know, very unusual because my mom... You know, I'm used to talking to her every day. So
let me ask you something. I just want to clarify, your mother knows that you're looking in the window? It isn't like you're just kind of hanging out there? And...
well, you know, initially I think I might have been looking in somebody else's window. you know, and the facility wasn't set up, you know. I mean, this isn't some kind of... you know, normal thing where they're used to everybody being able to talk through windows. I mean, this is just something that they offer for families so that there can be some kind of connection. So, I mean, there's You know, there's rose bushes and mulch, and, you know.
So they're
So,
trying
I
to
mean,
keep you away from her.
yeah, I mean, there's no sidewalk or anything like that. So I don't want people to imagine, you know, that it's like set up that way. It's really, it's grass, and it's just like you would imagine an outside of a building to be. And you just, there's no numbers or anything. So you're just kind of looking till you find, you know, that window
Oh, there
where.
she is.
Yeah,
Sorry,
you
sir.
know, and you know, so I wasn't able to talk with her. You know, I mean, not through the windows. We weren't screaming or anything like that. So, what I did was, I texted her brothers and you know, some friends, people like that, and they sent messages, and I wrote them on little. You know, I had to work with what I had, which is like some highlighters and a few things like that. So I wrote these messages and then just held them up at the window so that she could read the messages. And,
Oh,
you
that's
know, so,
cool.
yeah, I mean, so Happy Mother's Day, you know, probably will just have to be something like that, like a card. I mean, that's just written, you know, on some kind of poster that you can like just hold up in the window. Because you know, that's just sadly, that's the way this Mother's Day has to be. And of course, I'm, you know, I'm thankful that I still have my mom. And you know, I hope that when she hears this, that she'll know that, you know, that I miss her and I wish we could have a different Mother's Day. But we will.
Yeah, you could take her out to Golden Corral
That's right. Golden Corral is waiting for you, Mom, in June or, you know, whenever it opens up again. We'll make sure you get to go there. So yeah, that's kind of how, you know, the Mother's Day will have to be this year, which is hard, but you know, we're gonna make it through.
As Andy says, yes.
Exactly. So I keep repeating that. Only this time outside the we will get through this.
Not the window, but
Right. No breaking out of the rehab or anything like that. So, you know, we wrote about, so one of the chapters in Unstoppable is a scene with your mother. And so there are a couple places that you write about her in the play once and then in the book. So she passed away and you were what, 19 or 20, something like that.
Yeah, I think I was 19. It was 82, so I would have been, well, I would have been 19 or 20 then. I think I
Yeah.
was 20, so.
And so, you know, like what is Mother's Day like for you?
Well, I mean, sadly, because she's been gone for so long, it's really just another day. I mean, I try and remember her on her birthday, which is St. Patrick's Day, and Mother's Day, probably more so on St. Patrick's Day because I always forget when Mother's Day is.
The second Sunday of May.
Yeah, well, but it's kind of sad. It's like as time goes by, let's see, 82 is how many years ago?
like
40?
30.
38?
Is that right?
38, I think. So, I mean, as time goes by, her face sort of starts to fade and her voice starts to fade. I mean, I remember her and I remember things about her and stuff like that, but I don't really hear her anymore. I guess I can hear her saying certain things, or remember situations where she said things, but I don't really hear it in her voice anymore. And then it's hard to remember, like, what she looks like sometimes. I don't have any. I think I may have one picture of her, but yeah. So it as time goes on, it gets more and more difficult. You know, maybe because I'm getting older, and maybe because so much time has passed or whatever. But I mean, I often wonder, like, what she'd have to say now. She'd be in her 70s or early 80s now, and I often wonder what she would have to say about, you know, like, how my brothers and I and my sister kind of how our lives turned out and stuff. And you know, I try and think she'd be happy and, you know, proud of us all. I think she would be. It's just difficult. I mean, Mother's Day is—it's a difficult day when you've lost your mother, and so now now instead of it being Mother's Day, I guess it's a day to, you know, honor, like, my mother and all the people who, in the years after, have sort of filled that role for me, whether it be a friend's mother or even a spouse in some ways or whatever, girlfriends, things like that. So so that's kind of how I celebrate Mother's Day now.
Okay,
if that makes sense.
I think it does make sense. And, I think there are a lot of people out there that sometimes take over parts of roles that, you know, if someone passes away.
Yeah, I mean, everybody needs somebody to kick their ass every now and then if they're doing the wrong thing or, you know, going down a wrong path or whatever. And, there's been a few in my life that have done that, so.
Well, and, with Mother's Day has an interesting, the way it began, I think it's interesting. So, there was after the Civil War, there was a lady named Ann Jarvis, and she wanted the women of both sides, the North and the South, to make a community and friendship, because there'd been, obviously so much fighting and divisiveness. Right. And so this was her idea of getting the women, the moms, together. And she thought that would, really go a long ways towards making peace and a better United States, as we've come to know it.
Now it's a Hallmark holiday.
Yeah, well, that is part of the backstory, and it's kind of interesting in that. So she started a committee, and this was like, I think 1868, maybe somewhere around that. So she starts this community for Mother's Friendship Day. So that's kind of the beginning of Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. But then she has a daughter. Her name is Anne, and her daughter's name is Anna. And so Anna wanted to honor her mom for all the work she did with the committee of bringing together Mother's Friendship Day. So she made this day for her mom in 1908, and that was just kind of to honor moms. And so that was her idea, based on what her mom had done. So then we have Woodrow Wilson. He was the president that actually signed Mother's Day into law in 1914. But the interesting thing to me is that Anna did not like it because she thought it had become too commercialized. And, with the Hallmark and the things you were just talking about. So she started boycotts and walkouts. And she just was not happy because it had branched off from, you know, something her mom started and then her way of celebrating her mom. And then it had turned into something that she did not like.
Can you imagine what? Can you imagine what Mother's Day around her house was like?
No, well, so she spent all of her money fighting against this, like trying to stop Mother's Day.
Wow.
And obviously she was not successful, and you know, she died in a sanatorium.
Wow.
So, with no money, and that was, you know, bad ending to what was meant to be a really interesting day. But you know, I didn't know that, and I thought that that was a really interesting backstory for Mother's Day.
That's quite a dark turn in the, you know, normally happy Mother's Day, you know, a Hallmark rusty stover, a gift and flower giving kind of thing. So,
well, you know, on that bright side, I mean, we still do have Mother's Day. And do you know what the most popular gift is?
I'm going to say it's flowers.
That is a good guess. It's actually a card. And I guess that makes sense. I mean, there's probably like other gifts that come with a card, but it seems that everybody sends a card to their mom on Mother's Day. I mean, I'm going to be making one with a sign holding up to the window, but, you know, it's still a form of a card. So
right.
That is, that's the most popular gift. And another, and this is kind of morbid too, I guess, in a way, but it came from Anna Jones and, I mean, Anna Jarvis, and, you know, what she was trying to do to celebrate her mom. But the carnation, if your mother is living, then they get a, you know, a red carnation is to symbolize that. And then, you know, if your mother has passed away, then you would wear a white carnation on Mother's Day. So that's, if you, at churches and things like that, I remember seeing that growing up, the different colors, flowers that the women would wear.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess there's like everything else. There's a really positive, happy side, and then, you know, there's a little bit of the sad, darker side too. But
yeah,
Mother's Day still exists, and I'm sure all the moms out there would be glad just to be thought of on that day. And you know, grandmothers, people often will celebrate grandparents, you know, their grandmother too on Mother's Day. So
yeah,
it's kind of that tradition. One thing though, I will wonder, like, how is it going to be this year? Is that, did you know that on Mother's Day is the busiest day of the year for restaurants?
Yeah. My friends own a restaurant in Pennsylvania, at the Willow Tree. And, they always have a busy day that day. I think now they're, with all the social distancing and stuff, they're doing takeout, and, you know, they have a, like, a special menu, and, you know, I assume that by then they'll, you know, that's what they'll be doing, is everybody's doing takeout, so.
Yeah, so mom, you know, gets the day off from cooking, if that's still the, you know, this, the roles are not so defined, I think, anymore, that, you know, that isn't always the woman that's cooking to begin with.
Right.
But still, you know,
some women don't cook at all, right, Kat?
That is true. But, you know, you can still be a good mom and not be a good cook. As is evidenced a million times over every day.
When you make oatmeal, you have to put water in. Just saying. I'll give you that little tip there.
Yeah, for the listeners, that could come in handy on Mother's Day when they're making breakfast for their mom or something. And, you know, I have a son, so I'm not sure if he's going to, like, make any oatmeal or anything for me on Mother's Day, but you know, he probably would do a great job with it, I'm sure, if he chooses to do that. But you know, there are people like that celebrate with their pets. Like not all moms are you know, of humans. There are pet moms, and
really?
You know, just yeah, really all kinds of situations where you know, families with two moms, and then there's stepmoms, and so there's just a lot of love out there for people. It can't be too much, I think, you know, for a child to grow up being loved and have positive female influences, whether that's their biological mom or adopted mom or, you know, whoever provides that, sort of like you were saying before, that
yeah,
you know, the different things that you need, nurturing and sometimes punishment and you know, setting you on a better path, those kinds of things. You know, that's I think that's a great thing that we have moms, and I certainly, you know, I had a really good mom who with English, I struggled with English. It was kind of surprising as I think about it now, but you know, I could always write, but like the grammar and diagramming and all that really never was of interest to me. And I remember my mom like making me do all those little, because she was really good at it. And so she would like sit down with me and we would do my English, because we had English as a class. And, you know, she would make me do that. And spelling and, you know, all those things. So she was really good with the academic parts. And
that's pretty ironic considering you taught English for 20-something.
I ended up teaching English and in writing. So I know it's, I guess I owe a big part of that to my mom. So, I had a good mom in that and in a lot of ways. And so, yeah.
Still have.
So I do. I still have a good mom, and I'm glad for that.
Just make sure when you go to see her that you call her first so she knows that there just isn't some random person staring in the window at her with a mask on.
She probably would not be surprised at anything from me at this point, but, you know, I she's pretty proud, I think, of my brother. And myself, and you know, I had two grandmothers. So I was able to have those only for a very short time. Like my mom's mom, I think I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 when she passed away, and then my dad's mom, you know, I was able to have her for longer. But were you able to have your grandmothers?
I think she's passed away now. I don't really, I assume she has. Her and her, I don't know if it was her husband, I think they got married at some point, but they owned a diner, and when we were kids we would go there sometimes to eat, and you know, go to her house and hang out. She had a big pond out in the front of her house, with a bridge over it, actually. And, we would go there and, you know, play in the water and stuff like that, which was fun.
Yeah, that's like, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, a truck going by. you know, she moved to Florida, and then I saw her maybe a couple times since then. I think I heard that she had passed away. My family isn't very close, especially with, you know, with other, like, you know, older relatives and things like
right.
that. Because we
right.
we kind of grew up without them. And I just have those memories of her. She was a nice okay. lady, you know.
Cool. Well, so everybody out there, you know, again, happy Mother's Day, and hope that it's a positive day, and however, you know, that you're honored
Yeah, it's you know, I want to say Happy Mother's Day too to all the mothers out there, and all the people who have been motherly to me. You know, I've had people take care of me, and you know, look out for me and stuff, and I really appreciate that. So, yeah. So, aside from Mother's Day, I am waiting on. So, I'll tell you the Verizon story real quick. So, I
Yes.
like 2 weeks ago, I ordered two new phones. You know, because I have two that are one for myself and one for my son that are up for, you know, upgrades, and we've had our phones for about 2 years, so figured, yeah, you know, they had some deal going on, so I get two new ones. So I did it online, and they sent one of them to New York to my sister's house because that's where the billing address was. So I called them when I saw that and tried to get it changed, and they said, well, we can't do that because the fraud department, blah blah blah. You know, people do that all the time. They want to get their phone sent somewhere else, and so they sent one to my sister's house. And then I talked to someone about the other one, and they said, oh, well, that one's due to be delivered to your sister's house today. So I contacted my sister, and no phone showed up. So I contacted Verizon again, and they said, oh, well, we're going to put in a order to get the address changed, or, you know, we're going to can't we'll have to cancel the order for that phone, and then you'll have to like repurchase it. And I was like, okay. So a couple days later, I got a call saying, oh, did you get, you know, did you get everything resolved? And I'm like, no. So anyway, my sister, the end result is my sister sent the phone that went to her house, she sent it to me, and it's supposed to arrive today. Well, they said by 8 o'clock tonight. It's actually now 7 o'clock, and I've seen hide nor hair of the Postal Service, so I don't think I'm gonna get it today. And then the other phone is still in limbo. It's still shown as being prepared to ship on the Verizon site, and it still has my sister's address. So even if it does go out, it's going to the wrong place. So I don't know if, when, however, someday, maybe, possibly, I'll get that phone or any phone or, you know, whatever. But oddly enough, they, you know, don't mind charging me for it because my bill has all the charges for the next month in it. So I'm hoping that I can get it resolved, but you know, at this point, I'm not too thrilled with their customer service because, I mean, something as simple as changing a delivery address shouldn't be so difficult. But they made
Yeah,
it.
you know, you had said you had been a customer for 15 years, so
Yeah, so the this
you
is their
deserve something.
yeah. 15 years, I think, is it's like 15 years and a couple months, but I think the 15-year anniversary gift from Verizon is the big screw you.
Yeah, so I mean, Verizon, come on now, you know. Give him something for 15 years. Just send the phones, and
Well,
you know.
they did offer to pay for the shipping on the one phone from my sister's house in New York to here, so, but it was only $10, you know, so.
Well, you know, you can do better. Like, just get the phones there. I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, maybe by Father's Day that will happen.
Yeah, you know, it'd be a nice birthday gift to get a new phone.
Yeah,
That I ordered in like the middle of April.
that sounds about right, the way you know, shipping and such is going, but
It shouldn't be that hard. I don't.
it should not. And I'm sure, you know, if we like do 8 more episodes and then when we're doing the follow up one and we still don't have the phones, we're just going to have to step up the plan.
Yeah, I think the plan at that point would be to, you know, go
change
with
AT&T.
Yeah, go with AT&T or something. So anyway, we've just crossed the hour mark, so I think we'll wrap this up. And as always, if you have questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, or whatever, you can contact Kat at iwriteplays@outlook.com. Or, you know, if you really want to, you can contact me at backstorysessions@gmail.com. And we'll, you know, try and get back to you as soon as we can. So
yeah, notice how I get the complaints.
Well, you know, somebody, I think when we set this up, you had agreed to be the complaint department.
Luckily, nobody has complained yet, so.
No, that's true. We've been, we've had very few, if any. I haven't seen any criticism, have you?
Not through email. No, I have not.
Not through email? Are people calling you, like, behind my back? And what the hell are you two doing?
Yeah, you know, just not through email. We're doing well. And,
not through email. It's not your best work, Kat.
Yep, some might say that.
That's funny. Anyway, you know, obviously, you know, I don't expect that everybody will love everything we do, but, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's possible, but probably not that, you know, if you have suggestions or whatever to make it better, or, you know, maybe they're too long or I talk too much or whatever, maybe I say, you know, or something like that too much. Or ah, because I do notice I say that a lot. You know, you can obviously tell us and, you know, we'll do what we can to fix that for you.
You know.
You know. Someday, like, you know. We'll get around to it. It's on the list.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, thanks for doing this with me, Kat. I hope... everybody enjoys it, and, you know, they get a sense of what we're up to, what we've been doing, and, oh, do you want to talk about, like, anything in the future, like what we might be doing?
Well, we might be, doing another podcast after this one.
Might be. Depends on the criticisms, you know.
You know, I mean, we definitely will be. We've got some great episodes coming up. You'll be meeting lots more people through our interviews, and please, if you haven't joined our, join our Facebook group, Backstory Sessions. And, that is a very active group, and, it's a good way to stay up to date with what the future episodes are about.
Yeah. What are we up to, like, 300 people now or something?
Yeah. I think we've crossed over 300.
That's
so,
awesome.
It is. And, you know, so we have that, and we have more plays, that we'll be writing and that kind of thing. And we are getting Love and Jello. I mean, that is going to be coming out this year. So,
it is, damn it. I swear it will be out soon.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of things that we're working on, and, we just keep creating. I think that's what people can expect from us.
Yeah, I got a lot of more ideas and things that want to do, and you know, the podcasts are one thing, writing is a different, you know, it's similar. Podcasts are a little bit easier in some ways. They seem to be a lot more work though. But writing is, it has its also it's difficult aspects. But you know, I have a lot more ideas of things that I want to do, and hopefully we'll incorporate some of those things into things that we're doing, and then things that I want to do, and I'm sure Kat has her own ideas on things that she might want to do. So, you know, we'll be doing them.
Yabba dabba dooba.
All right.
Yabba dabba doing them. That's a good slogan.
No, it's not. Maybe for like Flintstone chewables or something, but
that's all, folks.
I think that one's taken. Sorry.
Oh, well. Can't blame me for trying.
All right. We'll talk to y'all soon. Take care.